Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a fun one. We got a guy who's been here before a long, long time ago. He's going to update us on what's going on. Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio, Scott Weiss, CEO of Speakeasy.
Thank you. Glad to be here again.
So we didn't scare you off, so that's good. Scott, tell us a little bit about Speakeasy. How are you serving folks?
We are a communication consulting company that's been in business for 45 years now, all over the world. We work with a large contingency of executives, from managers to CEOs, in helping them communicate more effectively, both internally to their teams and externally to their various constituencies.
So now, how did this business get started? I know you weren't the founder of this, but what was kind of the genesis of the idea?
The business was founded by Sandy Linver in 1973, who was a speech communication specialist of sorts. She was an educator that got introduced to the corporate world through the Coca-Cola company and incorporated the business in 1974 and grew the business for some 20 years organically, just through word of mouth. And then I was brought on board in 1994. And bought the business in 2004. So I've been with Speakeasy 25 years.
Now, so initially it was to help executives communicate more effectively?
It's always been about helping executives or individuals, I should say, be more effective in the way that they come across and the messages that they try to deliver.
And then, so is that only kind of in person, or is that in their writing? Where are the edges of this?
We focus on the spoken word and visual support that helps the spoken word be more effective. But we are not a company necessarily focused on writing, although a lot of our methodology can be applied to the written word as well.
And when you're talking to some of these companies, how does that work? They say our leaders need help. Like, how does kind of, how do they even find you or know that they have this need?
Yeah, a lot of companies are working on development of their various teams and executives to prepare them to be more competent in the work that they do. And obviously, communication is very important in the corporate world. So we get called on to assist in that endeavor.
And then, so then they'll say, okay, is this part of the development of their leaders? Is it just built into their leadership
development
program?
That's one of the segments we serve. We get engaged for everything from executive development, leadership development, to helping succession planning, helping young professionals evolve in their career. We get engaged for crisis management situations, for product launches. I mean, anything that involves communication to drive the business forward, we can be engaged to help with.
Now, you would think some of this would, they're not taught this in college, or like my kid's getting a communication degree. What, is that not a good play?
Actually, it's a very interesting question. So one of the reasons that we've been in business and so successful all these years is spoken communication is not a priority for college curriculum. There are speech classes that still exist, but it is a outlier.
Now, what about all of the social media now? It seems like every person has a video blog and all that. Are they just kind of winging it? Is that good practice? Is that something they should be doing?
They're winging it, as well as most of corporate America, because no one has been given the tools to really do it well. So they evolve through trial and error, basically. However, I would say in the general world of communication, be it chats, electronic platforms, other internet-based communication.
Like, everybody's got a webinar now.
Yeah.
Right?
So there's just a lot more communication, period. So spoken communication is still very important. There's just a lot more communication across the board, creating space for all these other platforms to be involved.
Now, is this, so is it practice though, or they're just practicing incorrectly? You know, like, isn't
yes, practicing incorrectly. So one of the things that is a very important part of our development process is when executives or individuals learn for the first time, that they are not the communicator that they thought they were. So we bring that self-awareness to them so that they can understand what their gaps are and understand how they need to develop their communication to close those gaps. So I have often referred to that. There's actually an article that was featured in Forbes a while ago called The Big White Lie, because we all go through our business careers thinking we're way more effective in our communication than we really are, because everybody's so kind and courteous. No one wants to let you know when you're not. So you have this sort of unknown around your communication that you carry with you for most of your career.
But it's kind of a blind spot.
It is absolutely a blind spot.
Now, are there some clues? Like, what are some clues that the kind of lay person could kind of be aware of that maybe says, maybe I'm not communicating as effectively as I think I am?
So it has nothing to do with applause or people patting you on the back and telling you you were great. What it has to do with is whether people follow the actions of your communication. So if I go into a communication situation with a very specific destination that I want to take that listener or audience, and at the end of that communication, they do what I ask them to do or what I influence them to do, then I would consider myself a pretty effective communicator. If they don't, I failed to compel them. So I would have to take accountability that I'm not the communicator that I thought I could be.
Now, I have a degree in advertising, and there was a saying back in the day that it's not creative unless it sells. So it sounds like this is a similar kind of thought process here.
That's consistent.
Now, so now when you go in and are working with someone, what are kind of the steps? What can a person expect if they're working with a speakeasy professional?
Well, the first thing that we do is give them a sense of their current reality. So it's that self-awareness of understanding where your communication is in terms of how effective you are with respect to connection, energy, your ability to engage others and create space for learning or influence or whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. So a lot of it starts with just really understanding where you are presently, creating a wish or an objective around the communicator you want to be, and then what lies in that space in between is the development that we will take you through to get you there.
And then, so the first thing, so it's some sort of videoing, are you videoing them speaking?
We use video for sure, but one of the signatures of Speakeasy is that we conduct workshops all over the world, and we put about 5,000 executives or individuals through those workshops globally. And you're in a session with up to 8 to 10 individuals who you don't know, who are peers, and they provide live feedback to your development. So in addition to just getting video feedback and expert feedback from our faculty, you have a small group of peers who are continually giving you open and honest feedback around your progress. Very powerful.
And then are they part of your same company, or it's just kind of...
No. These are people you don't know and you will likely never see again, but they're peers. So if it's a group of VPs, it could be VPs from, 10 Fortune 500 companies.
Right.
If it's managers, it can be managers. If it's CEOs, we do a session for C-suite executives. It's all C-suite executives, which is why that feedback is so powerful.
And because it's peer-to-peer.
And it's credible.
And it's not somebody that you feel like there's a political angle, like they're purely looking at what you're doing.
Now we're getting back to the big white lie. So when you get feedback from people you know, they're going to tell you what you want to hear. When you get feedback from people who have no skin in your game, you're going to get the kind of feedback that opens you up for development.
It's closer to the truth.
Exactly.
So now what percentage of if you go to your company and you go, how'd I do? You think it's like 80% are just telling you what you want to hear? Or is there's always one guy, right? Or one woman that's saying, they're the reality check.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question. As you go higher in an organization, the percentage increases. So how often do CEOs get very honest feedback around their communication? Probably never. So, the more consequences related to the relationship, the less truth you're going to get. So if it's manager to manager, you'll get more honest feedback. If it's manager to CEO, probably not.
Wow. So that's kind of a hole in the swing of a lot of executives then.
Absolutely.
So, just aside from communication, just the management of the company.
Absolutely. So a lot of the senior executives who come to Speakeasy, even though they're very accomplished and very successful, for the first time in their career, they will hear feedback around their communication they have never heard before. And that's what makes it such a powerful experience, because they realize that the people in the room that are providing that feedback, they have absolutely no agenda other than the truth.
Right.
And it's such a powerful awareness of what they need to do to get better that it's highly motivating for them to do so, which is why we're able to impact so much change.
And then, okay, so once they get this kind of reality check, in their head, they think they're 9 and 10 in the scale. And
exactly.
Then when they get out of this session, do they think they're like 3? Like, is it that dramatic that some people are just off the rails?
It is that dramatic. But what happens in our process, our methodology, is that it's a very deep dive into communication behavior. So on the morning of the first day, you think you're an 8 and you discover you're a 3. But by the afternoon of the third day, we have moved you maybe to a 6 or a 7. So there's more work to be done. You know what work needs to be done, and you're enabled to do that work. But we have already moved you a fair amount of distance, because we have expert faculty who are highly credentialed in how to help individuals push through blocks with their communication to make them more successful.
So is there some kind of low-hanging fruit that you see most people have these problems that are fairly easy to fix?
I would say that a lot of communication challengers are relatively easy to fix once you have
the awareness
that you have them, and you get the expert guidance on how to push through what's in the way.
So what's an example of some of the easy stuff? Or common stuff, maybe that's a better word.
Well, there's a lot of spoken communication that has to do with energy and your ability to connect with a listener or an audience just by the way that you commit yourself to that situation and how you listen. It's the whole art of conversation and dialogue that most of us have gotten really bad at, because we're all moving so fast and we're using technology to assist us, and we just aren't thoughtful and mindful that there's another human being or human beings out there that matter in the dialogue. So your ability to recognize their importance in moving them to the destination of your choosing makes you a lot more thoughtful and mindful of connecting with them, which is done through your energy, the way you pause and give them space, the way that they hear your messages and you craft your messages. There's a lot of things that are relatively easy to do once you start making that part of the program and how you communicate.
So a lot of communication is actually listening.
No question. I mean, obviously, particularly for leaders, if you're not listening to your constituents, how do you know how to lead them?
So now, what are some of the tactics then of how you would move somebody or how to improve their skills?
We create what we would call role play situations. So, you know, where you see an opportunity through feedback, whether it's video feedback or from a faculty member or somebody in your workshop, and then you try on a behavior that feels very, very different to you because it's not the behavior you're used to doing. And you see the response of those in your audience, your workshop peers, who say, that's it. You know, that's exactly the kind of
like behavior. Do more of that.
Exactly. And then you see it reinforced on videotape. So it's learning through experimentation and exploration, which for a lot of people feels very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But once you try it and you see the impact of it, it's very, very powerful.
And then people, once they actually see with their eyes, they can make the change more quickly than if you just told them, hey, you're doing this.
Absolutely. That's what makes our methodology so impactful, is that not only do we do it a certain way where you can't run and hide. I mean, these are live human beings providing feedback. You're seeing it for yourself on video. You're hearing an expert faculty person. Most of our instructors have been doing this their entire adult life. I mean, we have faculty at Speakeasy that have been there for 30 years. So these are world-renowned experts at communication. You can't really challenge their expertise.
Right.
So when you get that kind of feedback and you practice a different behavior and you see the impact that it has and you practice it over and over again until you own it, it's quite obvious that it works.
So now in a short period of time, they're going to have the skills to make the change, right? And then how much more time does it take for them to actually implement and stay compliant with the change?
Most of the work that we do in our workshops is enablement. So we're trying to make them aware of what they need to do. We're giving them enough time to try it on and see that it fits. And then there's a reinforcement aspect of it that we do through follow-up engagements with them to make sure that they're staying on track and so on. But a lot of what they experience in our three-day workshops, they change immediately. They just never knew they did it. So right. As soon as they see that they're doing it, it's like, oh, okay, I got that. Okay, I changed that behavior, and they never do it again. Because
what's an example of that?
Every time I talk, I look down. Mm-hmm. Every time I'm engaged with somebody in a conversation, for some reason, I'm constantly...
they just lower their eyes.
Yeah. Never knew I did that.
Right.
I see it. It's annoying. I'm never going to do that again.
Right.
And they change that behavior.
And that could be instant. Like some things like that, it can be instant because they just weren't aware of it.
Yeah. And we also do a lot of work with voice, which you would completely understand. So we have currently 8 licensed speech pathologists on our faculty. So we do a lot of work with voice, the quality of voice. It's my instrument by mm-hmm. which my words are heard. It's important that it's powerful and it's sincere and it's authentic. So most individuals have never thought of their voice as being an important part of their communication. You get that. Mm-hmm. So we help individuals and executives understand that tuning their instrument in a way that it's heard as beautiful music is important for people to listen. So there's a whole module in our programs around the power of your voice and the impact of your voice with a speech pathologist that a lot of people will learn very quickly that I can change a little bit of that instrument and make it heard a lot differently. For example, upward inflection, being able to pause, using your voice in a powerful way when you want to make a point. You can intellectualize that very quickly and add that to your toolkit as an executive or an individual. But if you hadn't had the awareness of it to begin with, you wouldn't even know it existed.
Now, I recently saw a documentary of Chris Rock performing stand-up, and it was about his... it's relevant to this, I promise. And it was about him... it was the evolution up until the point of he released a famous album, Bring the Pain. And before that, so they had video footage of him, and he thought that doing stand-up was standing in front of the microphone telling these jokes that he crafted. And then at some point in his career, he realized that the audience wants to see him sweat, that they wanted to see a performance. So he changed his behavior, and he would study preachers and pastors to get into the cadence and how they emphasize certain words and how they moved around the stage and how they really engaged the audience. So it sounds like some of those skills are not that these people are stand-up comedians, but it's just the power of your words and your presence you want to leverage to the best of your ability within being authentic, right?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, everything you're saying is spot on as long as it's combined with your authentic self. So there's nothing that gets in the way of connection more if it feels put on or superficial.
Right.
So if that's the way he communicates authentically and he now emphasizes that in the way that he converses with others, it's going to be more powerful. So as long as it's an authentic behavior and you're just emphasizing it and highlighting it and leveraging it and taking it to another level, it can be a very useful tool to be more
effective.
But
these are tools in a toolkit that you can say, you know what, that one, I can't pull that off. That doesn't feel right to me, but I can do that.
Then you shouldn't do it.
Right. But that's the thing, is you're giving them a wide variety of tools of which they can pick the ones that work for them and just kind of maximize that.
That's exactly right, which is what happens in our workshops. So when you were asking earlier, so you're going to try on different behaviors, and unless it feels right to you and you see it and you hear feedback around it, it's not going to be the right thing for you to put on. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is exploring and discovering your true authentic self through your spoken word. And once you discover that, it is a huge aha, which is why we've been in business as long as we have. I mean, 75% of our clients come to us through word of mouth. We're not advertising.
So right.
People go through an experience and it's life changing. And they tell others about it because it's such a powerful aspect of who they are. I mean, when you think about who you are in the world, most of it is manifested through your spoken word.
Right. Now, do you feel that young people nowadays, even though they're immersed in the social media, it's a disservice because of they're spending time, you know, using short bursts of language, even not even words anymore, but just bursts of emojis and texts and, you know, abbreviations, that's going to hurt them in the long run in their career if they don't put some energy into, you know, kind of upping their game in their communication style.
I agree. It, you know, the young professional space that we work with, it's easy to make a judgment that they are so tied to their phones and their technology that they're not very open to the idea of using spoken communication as an important part of who they are. When in fact, they're very communicative individuals. They just use a lot more things to communicate. Mm-hmm. So it's not that they necessarily use the spoken word less. They may use the spoken word as much as my generation. They just have 25 other devices that they use to communicate even more. So they're just it's a very communicative generation that uses a variety of things to carry what they want to say and how they want to message what they say. But that doesn't mean they necessarily don't respect the importance of the spoken word. And I would say my discovery is how many young professionals that I've engaged with who actually prefer to have a conversation than have a text exchange, given if they were given that opportunity. So if I had a young professional and I said, text me what you think about blah, 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 or we can go have a cup of coffee and talk about it, 9 out of 10 of them would say, you know what, let's go have that would be cool. Right. Let's go have a cup of coffee.
Right.
So it's not that they're against the idea of conversation. It's they're very communicative individuals.
Now, you recently wrote a book.
5 years ago.
5 years ago. Yeah. Dare, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Dare is for many years I had encouragement from a lot of clients to write a book about the importance of honesty and trust in communication in all aspects of an individual's life. And they felt that I would be the person who could tell that story. So after many years of being reluctant to do so because of the commitment involved and the risk essentially of saying, okay, I'm going to write a book, I finally decided to do it. I did not do it for profit. I did it to tell my story around my discovery of both my own growth, but also the growth of all the clients that I've experienced over the years in discovering the importance of honesty and transparency in developing trust in their lives through their spoken communication. And much to my surprise, I struck a chord with a lot of individuals, and the book did very, very well initially and continues to do well, supporting our platform, essentially, but my personal platform for most of my life.
And the platform of being authentic, being able to communicate effectively, these are skills that everybody should have, and especially in today's world where there's a lot more opportunities, it seems, to speak in front of other people and to communicate. You have to be able to do this. This isn't a nice to have. This is a must have.
Yeah. And the premise for DARE is a paradigm that most individuals don't quite understand. So the premise of DARE is that if I have a situation and I'm a person of influence, and this could be in any aspect of your life, by the way, I usually have two choices. I can be completely honest and authentic, or I can be somewhat exaggerate, deceptive, spin it. I mean, there's a lot of different words we can use to make it more acceptable. And a lot of individuals choose the second door instead of the first door because they believe the second door will drive a better result. And the premise of DARE is actually you're wrong. If you're more honest and more transparent, no matter what the message is, people will flock to you because people are in such a need for honest and transparent communication because they want to trust you. So if you're willing to expose a little bit of that, you will be surprised at how many people will follow you. And that's the premise of DARE. And there's a lot of examples of that, especially in corporate America, obviously, where executives don't choose that door. And if they had chosen that door, they would have had a much more positive business result.
It seems, though, you hear a lot of fake it till you make it. Right. Everything is about how I'm being perceived, and people want to have these false airs, and there's a lot of braggadocio that's kind of ingrained. I mean, how do you teach people to be more vulnerable and to,
yeah, I mean,
to kind of risk, you know, their reputation, at least in the eyes of others, and to open up and share, as opposed to, I got this figured out. You trust me. I know what I'm doing. I mean,
it's very, very hard. And you said it all very eloquently. It's very, very hard. People are uncomfortable with the notion, but if we can influence them to find an opportunity where they can experiment with it and they could see the results. You know, one of the best examples I can give you is how many leaders or executives I've come into contact with in the last 25 years where I've asked them the question, what was the last time you said, I'm sorry? What was the last time you said, thank you, sincerely and authentically to an individual? And you would be surprised at the responses I get. Those are not long sentences.
Really?
I'm sorry is two words and thank you is two words. So, I mean, it's not hard to do. But if you could find a way to interact with individuals around you in a way very authentically where you can use those words, you would be surprised what happens. So if a leader, you know, if a company does something and it doesn't achieve the results that they intended to, and you have a leader that stands up in front of a team and finds all kinds of reasons why it didn't work to defend the strategy or whatever, you're going to get a certain result. If you have another leader that stands up in front of that team and says, I'm sorry, I made a mistake and you're all part of that mistake and I feel really bad about it, but I'm going to make it right. And this is how we're going to make it right. You'll get a completely different response.
Right. Well, that sounds like you would get, now we're all in this together.
It's just honesty and transparency and the fact it's humility. I mean, I can't tell you how important
that should be
humility
the title of your next book.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a very powerful characteristic that human beings are attracted to. And so few leaders are afraid to go swim in that pool. And that's part of why it's called DARE. It's for most individuals and executives and people in business, it feels like a dare because we have, for whatever reason, as a society, we have followed a path around not being honest and transparent and authentic. And it has compromised trust in every level in society. Everywhere there has been a serious compromise in trust because of it, to the point that everybody's default position is, I don't trust you. So imagine the first time you meet somebody, whether it's in business or in your personal life, that's their default position is, I don't trust you. You now have to communicate to me in a way to earn my trust. And if you can figure out how to do that in your life, you're going to be a very successful human being.
And in today's world, I think it's even more necessary because I think there's so many opportunities. There, with social media, everybody's being videotaped or going to be a podcast. Their words are out there and they're in front of more and more people. And the message a lot of people see from so many people is, I got this figured out. I know what I'm doing. I'm the guru. How many ninja and gurus can there be on this planet, you know, that are experts in everything when most people are just trying to figure it out and we're just grinding and we're doing the best we can.
Right. So the dare is to experiment with this idea of being brutally honest and transparent and authentic in your space, in your life, and see what happens. It can be uncomfortable at times, but if you experiment with it, you will be surprised at what happens. And that's what our clients experience. That's what people who have read my book, who have communicated back to me is, I totally get it. I was in the situation and I had a couple different ways I could have approached that situation. I chose to be incredibly honest. It took a lot of humility to go there and I was shocked at what happened. And that's because our society, I get asked all the time, you know, since your book came out, have you seen a difference in the world? I mean, are people more trusting, more honest, less honest? Unfortunately, no. The needle's moving in the wrong direction. And every one of us can do our part to change the course, and that course. And particularly right now with what's happening in this country, it has gotten very, very bad. So we all have to be committed to the idea that trust is important in our lives. And to earn trust, you have to be transparent, authentic, and honest in your communication. That's how you earn trust.
Now, it sounds like when somebody engages Speakeasy, they might think initially they're going in to just fix a skill or a gap. But if they really embrace some of these learnings and the philosophy behind it, it can really impact the culture of the organization.
Absolutely. It can change lives. So one of the things that is a privilege in my position is I receive 1,500 emails and letters a year, almost consistently every single year. And they are not necessarily one sentence, thank you. Some of them are long declarations of gratitude for an experience that was life-changing for them, all through this discovery of what can happen as a result of how they communicate with others. So there's hope. It's why I've been so passionate about this for so many years, is that the communication can change the course of a lot of things in your life, especially business. So if you can improve on your competency and being able to do that, and the way that we go about it is not tips and tricks. I mean, this is really a personal growth experience to discover how can I come across as who I am in a way that moves people and creates actions around what I have to say and my messages. Whether you're a parent, whether you're, you know, a physician, whether you're an executive or whatever your vocation is, your communication matters. So why wouldn't you want to be excellent at it?
Now, is your typical client a Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 company, or can it be that college student that just wants to be better?
It can absolutely be that college student that wants to be better. We actually have a workshop that we do called Make Your First Impression Count that we do for high school kids. Mm-hmm. So we want to get individuals exposed to the importance of communication very early in their life. Now, obviously, because we have very credentialed faculty, we're not free, so there's a cost involved. So we attract all different kinds of individuals. 85% of our clients are corporate clients. But we do have a number of individuals who come through. We have athletes that come through. We have all kinds of different professions that are not necessarily corporate that understand the importance of communication and their personal success, and they seek us out for that development.
And if somebody wanted to learn more, have a more substantive conversation with your firm, what's the best way to find you?
SpeakeasyInc.com.
Good stuff. Scott Weiss, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it a lot. Appreciate it.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.